And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
I'm Scotty Hertz of the Ice Planet Hoth. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm ever going to be warm again until probably about March, but...
I actually slept in a tauntaun last night.
Did you? Yeah, that's what it needs today, for sure. So anyway.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Or you can also subscribe through iTunes. Today we are pleased to welcome back to Open Sources one of the few returning guests I think we've had, actually. That's not an indication of the quality.
Returning champion. Absolutely.
The mayor of Guelph, Cam Guthrie. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us, especially this busy time of year.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you guys and
thanks very much
to everyone listening. So, yeah, really happy to be here.
And I'm actually... A bit of true confession before we start. I'm hoping this goes better than the dream I had of us doing this last night, because it was a complete disaster. It was a Trump-level disaster, how he phrases disaster. Well, but we were also doing the show at the Dollarama on Silver Creek for some reason.
That has to happen now. Absolutely. Live remote. We'll talk to Jenny. She can set it up.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say about that.
All right. We're just trying to
counseling or something.
If you're a psychiatrist and you listen to the show and you know what that means,
the fact that you're dreaming of me is already a problem.
And me too. You need the Dollarama psychologist.
The Dollarama psychologist. All right, now that everyone's loosened up.
That's all three, by the way.
Yeah. Well, they are expanding their services. But this isn't a commercial for Dollarama. So, Cam, I guess first off the top, last time we had you here, it was about 6 months after you were elected.
And really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's
wow.
You're halfway through your term now, so I guess I guess the first question is, you know, you're halfway there. How's it feeling? I mean, are you getting things done the way you hope to get them done? Or what's on your mind, like, at the halfway point?
Yeah, you know, I've been asked that question, actually, over the last couple of weeks, just because by default it's the halfway mark. December 1st was the halfway mark, and so I've been asked that a few times. I believe things are going very well. It has been a struggle. It has been a learning curve. You have to adjust, quickly on the fly. You're always kind of you're always having new challenges put in front of you, and you have to adjust as you go. And a lot of it is cleaning up. You're cleaning up a lot of things that you didn't know about and you did know about. So there's been some surprises. And then there's been, the relationship building amongst the counselors and myself. That can take time. It can mm-hmm. still take some time. And you quickly realize that you are one vote. And to really answer your question about are you getting the things done that you wanted? I think you said something like that. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is getting done and some of it's not. But I think overall, I think it's actually going quite well. I think the community sees it going better as well, mm-hmm. which is something that I really take seriously. And as I said at an event just before I came here, and not to pull at the heartstrings right away, but like, we're really blessed in this city. Like, mm-hmm. we're a great city, and we have a lot going for us, and I guess in the position that I'm in, being able to go to events all over the place, I see the citizens and the businesses and the corporate citizens that really are the ones that are just making our city really, really great, and they teach me every day new things about what makes our city tick and about how we're just really a fortunate city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
speaking of how things are working, I guess one of the things we should get out of the way, and actually I want to talk about this first because you were saying you get a lot of feedback from people and you're very available on social media too, which helps or hinders depending on the kind of feedback you get. But one of the things I did notice from Budget Night was, at least on my Twitter feed, there was a visceral reaction to the levy and the total increase. But then one of the things I noticed, you posted on your Facebook the next day, kind of like what your thought process was. And the reaction under that was the complete opposite. It was like, yes, Cam, you're absolutely right. I'm glad, you know, you are standing up for this and that and the other thing. It's like, and that kind of gave me whiplash that, like, one day it's like a complete Boo Earn situation where, you know, they're out for your blood. And the next day you come out before, like, the digital mob and you kind of bring them over to your side.
Well, I think you've described it actually quite well. There's the shock and awe, I guess, moment, if I could describe it as that. I think I tried to explain myself as best as I could on the budget night, especially around the levy. I mean, you guys probably know me well enough. I'm not one to have, even right now, I have no notes in front of me. I just kind of speak from the gut, from the heart.
And I can confirm he has no notes.
Independently verified, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, I have heard, and I can honestly tell you I've probably had 6 or 7 emails since budget night around the levy issue that are, well, words I wouldn't put on the radio right now. And they
Christopher's are glad to hear you say
that. And they are what I would call from, they're usually sent from what I would say are the frequent flyers. And
sure.
I don't disrespect those frequent flyers. That's good to hear from them. But they are from the people who, you know, speak up the most. It is interesting, though. I'm glad I didn't know that you saw that on Facebook when I did describe, you know, what we had sort of accomplished in the budget on that one Facebook post. I mean, there was, I think, you know, almost 200 or 300 sort of interactions with that post.
Yeah.
And they were 98% positive. They understood that we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's real. It's not made up. It's not fantasy. $191 million problem is real. It exists. And we need to find solutions to try and address that issue, and that sometimes means, as I coined over the budget process, you know, drinking the Buckleys, right? It tastes awful, but it works, and it that defines the levy a little bit, and people seem to understand it, and not totally. Blame me, not that they're blaming someone else, but they
right.
don't. They, I think they look at me and council as a whole as finally actually doing something about this issue and not kicking that can. And I know politicians say that all the time, kicking the can down the road. But literally, we were kicking a can down the road. We are now not doing that. And I'm actually very proud of council as the whole making that decision.
It was a pretty smooth process this year, which was surprising. Given, I mean,
it was
there was the contentiousness about what the levy was going to look like, but there was also comments from you and other counselors that was like, "This is going to be a very tight budget process. We're going to have to. There's a lot of hard decisions to make." But in the end, it seemed to go It seemed to almost go the opposite. It was a smooth transition. Is that just how it looks at the meeting level, or was there a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that was sorted out?
No, I think. There was lessons learned as this team, when I say team, I mean this council, over the last couple of budgets. I think there's been some maturity, and I say that to myself as well. About how, you know, sometimes you just will not get everything that you want in a budget. And does that mean that you vote against a budget because you got 99 things and not one? So I think I kind of went into the budget with that sort of mentality right off the bat. I did talk to a lot of counselors sort of, you know, in the hallway or on the side. What are you feeling? What's kind of your threshold? Is there a number that you would just, you know, throw your papers in the air and scream and walk out the door? And so I had a little bit of a vibe of what maybe it was about to occur. But it was definitely one of the smoothest budget processes. And then there was a lot of proactive work done by counselors to go out to the community, town halls. I had my town halls to get feedback over a lengthy period of time. So I think we can never be accused of, you know, not being available or not going out and trying to talk to people, all of us. And then staff's work really kind of, you know, hit it home. Mm-hmm. They presented a good budget for us to sort of grapple with. And so I think that's, you know, those kind of those reasons all pushed together is why I think it went really smoothly on that last night. And every year we always do and I always do sort of a postmortem, you know, and immediately, like driving home after budget night, I'm always thinking, you know, what can I do better? What can we do better? And so, I mean, I'm already, you know, all of us are trying to think, OK, what can we do better? So I think over the years we were trying to learn and then implement the new things into the next year. And then we learn again and we get feedback and we learn again and implement the next year. So it should always try to get better and smoother as we go. Mm-hmm. That should be our goal every time.
I do want to dive into a bit about the levy, because it was it was voted 1%, which was 0.5% more than what staff was recommending. I believe, though, there's perhaps some doubts over whether it's going to be a 10-year timeline or what the timeline of it's going to look like. Can you shed some light on it? I know there's still staff decisions to be made, but in terms of your own thinking.
Sure. So here's the reality, and I don't want to take up too much time if you have lots of questions. I have no idea, but
we got the full hour.
A 0.5% levy mm-hmm. would have taken 22 years to catch up on the backlog. Mm-hmm. A 1% was around 11 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then the 2%, which would be like Buckley's to do the power of two.
Extra strength.
Yeah. it would be about 6 years. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I haven't actually kind of asked some of the counselors yet. Like, so why did you agree to one? I didn't ask that of some of them yet, but I can definitely answer for me. If we had done a 0.5, we would have been just arguing about another 0.5 or another, you know, 0.25 or another 0.8 or point, you know, 3/4 of something. That would have been the argument, I believe, for the next year or two again. Mm-hmm. 1% sort of says this is a good number. That we can land on now and be done with it. Again, those are just that's my opinion. And the other issue is that although staff suggested the 0.5, there was also a separate report that also said if you want to also look at any city building, what they would define as city building, like a South End Rec Center or a library or other kind of city building projects like that, that right in that report, embedded in that report, it also said, oh, by the way, that would be a 0.52. So mm-hmm. if you take the two together, that equals the one. Now, we're waiting for a report to come back next year, I believe before the mid of next year, that will collectively have staff look at that full 1% and determine what is the disbursement of that 1%. Should it be 0.5 to, you know, the roads and the bridges and the potholes and the sewer pipes, and then 0.5 to a South End Rec Center and a library? Or should it be shifted? I'm just making up numbers here on the fly, but Should it be 80% roads and bridges and sewer pipes and 20%? Or is it the other way around? I don't think it would be that. But but I think that's what that staff report next year will come back and really clarify for us. But every year that we don't do something, we are literally making it worse every single year. And I don't mind getting elected to clean things up, mm-hmm. Clean up a mess, but I will not leave a mess.
Sure.
I will not leave a mess. And so I believe that people need to look at their leaders collectively, councilors and mayor, as someone who is able to adjust and not be so ideologically bent mm-hmm. In a position that they are doing what they feel is the right thing for the community, even if that right thing is sort of that, you know, tough to swallow. And I firmly believe that I've been honest with people for the last couple of years since I've become the mayor. Well, hopefully before that too. But and I'm continuing that honesty. And if I'm not honest with people about the situation we're in, then, you know, I believe I would actually lose some credibility moving forward year three, year four, or whatever happens after that. So I think this was the year to tell people the truth, be honest, and start tackling this problem. And, you know, that is why I believe you see Facebook comments, social media comments, and others of people sort of understanding. You're educating as you move forward. And when you educate, people understand better, and they kind of they come around. They come around to that understanding, and they want to get on side.
And talking to people, too, I think a lot of people – I think everybody hates the idea of paying more taxes.
Of course. Sign me up.
But I think one of the problems when we look at this is on a municipal level, we're very kind of restricted in how we can raise funds, too.
We are.
And I know you work with bigger groups of fellow mayors in
yes.
terms of what other tools can be developed?
None. Well, other than fees, maybe.
Right.
You know, we could – hypothetically charge $20 a bag for garbage or something maybe. But so, you know, not to get too legislative on you, but in the province of Ontario, there's only one city in all of Ontario that has special powers,
right.
and that's under the Toronto Act.
Mm-hmm.
So the Toronto City of Toronto, they have the powers to do other taxing and other fees that no other municipality in Ontario has,
like road tolls, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so speaking of a levy, that could cost people up to $1,000 a year.
Sure,
just that road tolls, right? The levy that was implemented here on the average household is about $3.31 or 33 cents a month, you know, for the average household in Guelph. I'm not downplaying that.
Yeah.
I would rather that money, you know, be in their pocket. I would absolutely rather that. But with the situation and the cards that we've been dealt with, we must use different tools to address that issue. It's not just taxing people more.
Right.
People have to remember, and you guys would probably know, I've been fighting since a councillor. We need to do service reviews. We need to do service reviews. It's never been done in the city. We've never had a policy. We've never had a framework. It is this council,
mm-hmm.
just a couple of months ago, that passed unanimously a service review framework to start looking at. And that's the internal look.
Right.
So lots of people said, I don't mind you taking a bit more money from me, Cam, but you better be looking inside too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did that. We passed it unanimously, service review framework, to start looking at services, to find efficiencies and to find savings, to find better ways of being more effective with those services. So we're doing sort of different tools to address that issue. But when you have a $191 million infrastructure problem and a $222 million or so operating budget, you can't cut $191 million out of a $221 million operating budget.
Sure.
You can't do that. So there's different tools that have to be used in sequence together or in harmony, really, to try to address this problem. It's not just about asking people for more money.
Absolutely. I was talking about this problem with substitute Politico Bradley Breeden earlier today, and we were talking about his observations about the budget. It'll be a podcast later this month. I'll put that plug in. it just seems like at a city level, there's been downloading for years from the upper levels. And
yes,
then
that's true.
The provincial government put on this caveat that cities can't run deficits, which...
Yeah, wish they would do the same.
It's a story for another day. But, it just seems like we're kind of working with one hand behind our back here.
And it's very difficult. And I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, please.
But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so it is extremely difficult. And, you know, I just I'm not trying to say, well, if, you know, like your parents used to say to all of us, so if your friend jumps off a cliff, are you going to jump off a cliff? But if you look at these other mayors, these other colleagues that I've gotten to know over the last couple of years, and this is part of, I believe, this maturity of me running, you know, as the mayor and talking to my colleagues and researching, you know, I just had a mayor from another city reach out to me today who just passed a 1% infrastructure levy,
mm-hmm.
based on some of the leadership that came from Guelph.
Right.
Because of their community that has millions of dollars of infrastructure problems. The city of Mississauga has a 2% infrastructure levy always.
Mm-hmm.
This year they added an extra 0.5 for a pool in a rec center.
Mm.
That's another levy. We have Brampton with a 2% levy. that they have, and they just went from 1% to 2%. Mm-hmm. They also have an extra levy on top of that to go towards a new hospital. Mm-hmm. You're seeing Barrie has a 1% levy. I could just keep going. I could just keep naming these cities. And Kingston is another one. All of these cities do not have with that literal hand behind their back, as you just said.
Right.
And I think where people get upset the most, and it's me too, right, is in operating budgets. It's like, sure, you know, it's going to all this overhead, and what's all my hard-earned money really going to? And for this budget, which I voted for, it was one of the lowest operating budgets in several years. Mm-hmm. And it was passed unanimously, by the way, which mm-hmm. which was really nice. And now we have a dedicated infrastructure levy. And I think that's where people are coming around. They're like, I now know that it's not going to this nebulous operating budget where I don't really maybe know what's going on. It's that $3.33 a month is going to this defined envelope that can only be used for the roads and the bridges and the storm sewer or the sewer pipes and the potholes and the roofs in our buildings and possibly to South End rec centers or libraries or whatever other city building. So they seem to say, hey, for once, I actually see where my money is going. Thank you for having it dedicated, and every penny is going to that. And I just want to say one more thing, if you don't mind.
No.
The other reason that I think, you know, if we get back to sort of what you originally said was about, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, the mayor would vote for a levy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who would have known a year ago that Justin Trudeau would have won the election on a promise to go $60 billion in debt for infrastructure funding? And now, by the way, that's been up to $83 billion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Started at 10 right in there. Yeah.
All right.
Just keep going.
Higher. So the way it works is, folks, is if you hypothetically have that $10 million bridge mm-hmm. in this city that needs to be fixed, mm-hmm. and everyone says it has to be fixed, and all of a sudden the feds and the province come together and they say, we're willing to pay 75%, $7.5 million of that bridge for you, but you have to give us 2.5. And if we don't have the 2.5, the $10 million bridge still needs to be fixed.
Right.
And they go somewhere else. We don't get the money. And the burden of that whole $10 million is on the local taxpayer. And so the reason why it's important, I think, for all leaders to have that willingness to shift amongst new information and a new climate that we're in, you know, we need to leverage a bit more money right now so that we can get even more from the federal and the provincial government that actually saves money at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And most people I talk to, when I explain that hypothetical $10 million bridge in the way I just did to you and your listeners, I hope, they go, oh, okay, I get it. I get it. Right. They mm-hmm. now they seem to understand. And again, who would have known a year ago?
Right.
Justin Trudeau would have won on a promise of going billions of dollars in debt for infrastructure. We need to take advantage of that. And unfortunately, to take advantage of it, it means we got to have money in an envelope ready to go.
Well, we could always cut the communications department, right, Scotty?
Oh, yeah. Just get the axe out, man.
Heard that one 11 times.
Yeah. We work cheap. They'll keep us, right?
I wonder where you heard that.
How did doing the Facebook Live work out for you? You tried that for your town hall, one of your town halls.
So actually, it's interesting. I was maybe a little bit disappointed this time. So the first time I ever did a Facebook Live was on a whim. Yeah. I was at home. There was nothing going on. It was a miracle that I wasn't out somewhere. And I just said, I'm going to try this Facebook Live thing. And I've never tried it before. And I think there was almost 200 people watching at one point. I did it a second time, maybe a month and a half or so ago, and there was, you know, 70, 80 people, or maybe less than that, watching. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I'm going to do this town hall budget Facebook Live thing. And I think at the tops there was maybe 28 or 29 people. Now, you learn as you go.
Yeah.
I think I might have done it on the wrong day, and I think I might have done it at the wrong time. Because it was interesting. I did it 7 to 9 o'clock, and I noticed a big uptick in people coming on between 8:30 and on.
Ah.
I think maybe kids are getting put to bed, you know, they're home from their activities or whatever, and then they go, the people maybe are on watching later at night. So, you know, learn as I go, but I wanted to use that as an option to get out there. And so as much as I maybe thought I would want more people to be on it, it still is a good, you know, tool, another tool to interact with people about what's going on at City Hall.
Mm-hmm. No, and I appreciate that. We're kind of coming up on the end of the first half hour here, but I just wanted to squeeze in maybe a couple more. You have the State of the City speech coming up at the with the Chamber of Commerce breakfast at the end of January.
Yeah, January 27th.
Can you give us a bit of a preview about the State of the City?
Sure. Yep. Well, it's basically your first question.
Mm-hmm.
So about a month ago, I talked to Kate, who's my communications advisor in the mayor's office. And I said to her, I want this year's theme, I want it to be basically, so what have you done? Because it's 2 years in.
Right.
And it's not what have you done as in Cam, the mayor. It's what have we done as a council, as a corporation? What have we accomplished in the last 2 years? And so we sat down right away and we started kind of throwing things out there on, you know, onto a pad of paper. And it actually is very amazing, all of the bullet points we were able to put down, like literally a couple pages of things that this term of council has actually moved the dial on.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, you know, all it becomes front page news, and some of it people just don't know about, but it's foundational to making our city better. And so I intend to basically speak about what have we accomplished in the last 2 years, and what can we be proud about.
And before we go to break, if there's one thing that's on your radar, I mean, aside from the, sort of the regular things that come up in the course of a year, but if there's one thing about 2017 in particular you're looking at accomplishing, what would that be?
I would really – well, my hope is that these service reviews start to bear fruit because, as I said, we just voted it unanimously at council. And so my hope is that that as those reports – as those reviews get done, that the reports start to show, you know, some good news, some efficiency, some better ways of providing services. So that is my hope, 2017 for that, along with getting some infrastructure money from the federal and provincial government that we can tackle the infrastructure issue.
All right. So we are going to take a break. Again, thank you to the mayor for coming by today. And we still have a lot more open sources coming up, including listener questions. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. And we were going to take a break for some music and for some public service announcements. And we'll be back in a couple of moments here on Open Sources Guelph. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Incomparable and sadly the late Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings from their 2015 album It's a Holiday Soul Party, which the mayor has just downloaded while we were sitting here, so he's committed.
I am a fan.
Dap Kings fan now.
Yes.
And that,
yes.
That was 8 days.
My wife will love that. Yeah.
8 days of Hanukkah, and there's a bit of a tie-in, too. Cam, tell us about its first year for a Hanukkah celebration at City Hall. I was reading about
it
a bit.
Yeah, it is. It's great, eh? It's great to be able to celebrate, you know, different faith communities in their traditions and their culture, and that's exactly what the Market Square is for. It's a public space, and so this is the first year that Hanukkah is going to be celebrated. So it's
when is it? In a couple
weeks, December 27th at 5:30, and Yeah, they're going to allow me to light the menorah, the candle, and
nice.
Apparently it's 9 feet tall.
Oh, it's huge. It's one of the it's like the huge checks that you get at the charity, but because it's a public menorah, it's the huge menorah.
That's right. Yeah,
and I watched the one on college there. That on the.
Oh that's yeah, that's right. So I. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's just a nice community, another community event that I invite the whole community to come down to and enjoy. And then while I'm on the community event roll, I have to give a plug. December 21st is our Christmas tree lighting, the merrymaking event downtown at 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And we're going to have live music, Christmas carols. We're going to have Christmas tree lighting. That starts at 6:30. We have a live entertainer. He's called The Fire Guy.
Oh.
So you got to be there for that. And then the farmer's market will be open special that night for any kind of last-minute Christmas shopping. And then just like last year, I asked the community to bring clothing and toys for the Syrian refugees that were arriving in our community. This year, the place I would like our community to bring canned goods and food to is called The Seed, Ingwell. And so we're going to have all under the Christmas tree. If we could do the same as last year, the community comes, puts everything under the Christmas tree there, and just to give back to the community. And I'm really looking forward to it. So December 21st, 4 to 8 o'clock. So it'll be entertainment and everything starting that whole time. But the Christmas tree lighting starts around 6:30.
And people will be able to skate this year.
Yes, not like last year. They will be skating. And I think the fire guy is going to be like in the middle or something.
Melt a hole in the middle.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this fire guy. Yeah.
Nice. It may look like Lethal Weapon before it's over, but that's okay. Well, we're going to get into listener questions. And we put out the word for, I think, the last month that we're looking to collect listener questions for the mayor. I'm going to start off with a bit of an easy one, because it does sort of play into one of the things you ran on. But this person was interested in seeing more action on graffiti and vandalism in town. And I know that's something you've talked a lot about when you were running as a councilor and as mayor. I guess in terms of number one priorities, it's not the number one, but I'm sure you might have something to say about the topic still.
So a couple things. We do have an issue, especially more in our downtown core. Now, it's interesting here, is multifaceted issue. There's tagging, which is 95% of the issues tagging, which is still graffiti, really, at the end of the day. But from what I've been told from the police, it's actually gamers' names. So their online persona, their online name, they win like games or something, like Call of Duty or something, and then they win something, and then they run outside and they tag stuff. When it's done on Canada Post boxes or on Hydro boxes, that's not the city responsibility. We need Hydro to go out and fix that, or you need Canada Post to go out and fix that. So we do reach out to them to please, you know, come and do that, take care of it. If it's like hate kind of crime, like hate wording, or, you know, a Nazi symbol or something like that, or swearing or something like that, or something vulgar, I mean, we're on it right away. But we do have, I think, an issue with it in the downtown core. The problem is that we do not have a bylaw that basically forces private owners of a building or a commercial space or a business that they must remove it within, 72 hours.
They have that in Toronto,
they
right?
Do, yeah. In other cities, they do have that. And then if you don't do it, then the city swoops in, they do it, and then they send a bill, basically, to – you know what? I'm actually up and open for exploring that issue because it's all about putting your best foot forward, right? Like, as you come into a city, you want your entrances to be nice. As you come into a downtown core, you want it to look nice and inviting. And so I think it is still an issue with me, and it needs to be addressed. We do have a motion, I think, that was passed last year about this issue. I think we're maybe looking forward to a report coming back this year in regards to it.
Okay.
So I've got one here from Mike, and it's about housing. And he says, we've seen lots of condominiums being built in the past few years, but very little in the realm of affordability. Beyond the rumored Habitat project in the ward, which is likely many years away, is the city taking other steps to create actual affordable housing stock anywhere in town?
Well, the only concrete steps I could say to Mike is that we are now building back up our reserve in the affordable housing reserve. So, for instance, this budget alone, we put another $100,000 in. So I believe we're I'm sorry, don't quote me. I think we're around the $800,000 mark now in that reserve. And so that we can leverage maybe some other provincial or federal funding that comes to go towards affordable homes. The province has also initiated a talk I'm forgetting the word that describes it right now. But it's basically like almost like forcing a developer to have a certain percentage of new builds be affordable.
Right.
I'm sorry, I can't remember the word.
Is that along the lines of Dublin Street, though, where it's like you'll get this money if you put in X different worlding?
No, that's a little bit different. But that's going through the province. And I'm very sorry, Mike. If you want to email me, mayor@guelph.ca, I will get you a better answer than I'm trying to do on the fly right now. But
anyway, it's tied to what we could do here.
Like, yeah. So. And of course, the most recent issue, Dublin Street, if you want to bring that up, is that's where the federal government allowed $3 million to be put towards a project that met criteria. And just so Mike understands, that affordable housing realm is actually not done by the city. It's actually done by the county.
Right.
The county is actually the service provider under legislation for that type of affordable housing. And so the 75 Dublin, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't be that opinionated. council determined, although my opinion was very clear beforehand, council determined that they did not want to have that built there. And so the $3 million that was going to be put towards 20 senior affordable homes, a press release just went out this week or just late last week that money is now being moved to Palmerston. So okay. Guelph lost that opportunity.
The Habitat project Mike mentions, that's Imico,
yes,
where there's a lot of issues to deal with before we start putting shovels on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yep.
You might not want to stick a shovel in the ground right away on that on that piece of land.
However, we just passed, a memorandum of understanding.
Yeah.
I was in contact today with our local MP, Lloyd Longfield, about that issue. Speaking to him, so as much as there's, 30 things that have to align,
right.
We're at least 10 things down the road instead of zero.
It's actually happening now. That's been years and at least 15, 20?
Well, it closed in the 90s.
20, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. At
late
least.
90s.
Yeah.
Church of the Universe, it's been through a lot of hands, hasn't
yes, it has. For a dollar.
There might be some lessons
some
there.
But
I got a question about cycling safety. This person is concerned about safety of cyclists at Gordon Wellington and Edinburgh on Wellington. So I guess the Wellington stretch in particular. And someone also noted that Waterloo and the Edinburgh corridor from Waterloo to Stone is also problematic for bike riders. Is there something? I mean, I know there's a cycling plan coming
master
up,
plan.
Master plan.
Yep.
What about addressing the safety in these areas particularly? Because that's
okay. I love talking about this.
Yeah,
I love. So that's a great question. So, frankly, my opinion is that our cycling master plan that was passed in the last term of council, mm-hmm. which I endorsed, it's already wrong, and the key to proper bicycling infrastructure is one word, and that is separation.
Mm-hmm.
That is any study, any research, anybody who has an authority on this issue, the key thing is separation.
Like on Stone Road out here?
No. So separation is not a line on a road. Separation
right.
is actual potted plants that go all the way down
okay.
the road or a median.
Or having, on Woodlawn's got that separate
Woodlawn,
tarmac
that's
area,
the first
right?
time that's ever been done in Guelph with a separate, a multi-use
and York
lane
has
like
it
that.
Now after the new makeover, right, though?
I believe
York
so,
road
yes,
does.
Along the park there.
I walked on this morning. There you go.
So frankly, what we need to do and what I want to do is I would like to, in this coming year, we have the transportation master plan being opened up.
Mm-hmm.
In conjunction with that transportation master plan, we really should be relooking at our bicycling master plan
mm-hmm.
because that is transportation. And we need to have separation as the key element of that. And there are things that we can do to help with bicycling infrastructure here. And frankly, I just came from a 2-hour seminar on Tuesday night, I think it was, at the E-Bar, Lessons That Can Be Learned from Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
I forget her name, but Benita, I think her name was, who did a presentation there. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. And we need to look at what other cities do right, mm-hmm. and we need to start being bold in taking some of those actions for cycling infrastructure here.
I have one from Mr. B247. Very mysterious. Right. We'll call him Mr. B, I guess.
Okay.
And it's to do with the situation with drugs in town. What is the mayor's plan? It's very specific. For the obvious signs of drug abuse downtown throughout the city. The signs of it are everywhere, and it's easy to see the people it affects. What are we doing to fix this?
And we had a couple of questions about
this. Yeah, I would have phrased that probably a little bit differently, but I guess the essence of it is that it's noticeable,
yeah,
as everyone knows.
Yeah, so Mr. B, I actually agree with you, so I'll just say that right up front. So I have, by default, I sit on the police board. So the last couple of years that I've been on the police board, I've been, really learning, researching, finding out what's going on with this problem. Probably the biggest issue, if we to nail it, is the meth problem that's happening in town, to be truthful about it. And there are signs of it in the downtown core that have upset both me, merchants, people that are tourists that might be coming in, other citizens that are walking down there. I can absolutely confirm that the police are on this issue. Mm-hmm. I say that because I sit on the police board and I see what they're doing. So I know that they are. Now, police, though, is not the only way of helping this issue.
Right.
We need to also have the social side of it too, of counseling and rehabilitation for people and the, you know, not just handcuffs, right? So it has to be a blend of different tools to address this issue. The Drug Strategy Force, along with Anti-Poverty Task Force as well, this comes up often, and I sit on or I meet with those people as well. And it it is an issue. I would have to say that it's definitely noticeable to the people that are in charge of implementing those tools, whether they are on the police side or on the non-enforcement side, to try to help with the situation. And I have seen movement on it. It's not being ignored.
Right.
But I, at the same time, I do recognize what Mr. B is bringing up.
It's one of those things that's it's systemic, and it's not just it's another not just Guelph problem.
It isn't. It's kind of migrating this way.
Right.
Actually, I've been hearing a lot of it coming even from, you know, past, like way past Fergus Way, and also not Fergus, but past there, coming. It's not like a Toronto to Guelph thing. It's migrating from kind of all over, and you have to remember too that a lot of the social services providers are in the downtown core. Mm-hmm. And so those people that are struggling with this addiction, they also need help from the social services providers, and they're in that downtown core. So
right.
So you sort of by default you're going to see that because by default those providers are there.
Right.
So it's an issue. It is, and we're tackling it. Yep.
I'm going to ask this question. Somebody left on Reddit, and it's a bit confrontational, but I'll ask it anyway. And it addresses one of my favorite issues. But they ask, would transit privatization benefit the city? Why or why not?
Well, I have no idea. I don't know how to answer that because I leave that. We're doing a service rationalization or a service review on that very issue. As I said a few minutes earlier, council unanimously passed service review framework. Mm-hmm. We picked three services to do. Waste is the first one. Boulevard maintenance is the second one. Transit is the third one.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a believer. By the way, this is not a confrontational question at all. That's an easy one. I've always been a believer that we owe it to the taxpayers to check.
Mm-hmm.
But we should not always think that the outcome is going to be privatization.
Right.
By the way, there's already 50% of our mobility transportation in town is privatized.
Mm.
So we already have an element of that within our transit system anyways. The only thing that I would suggest is that it's not always about privatization of the whole thing. There are other cities that have multifaceted of some part of it is privatized, sure. Whether that be fleet and maintenance, whether that be the owning of the vehicles and the drivers are union still. Like, so there's all these different elements that can come to play. The only thing that I would like to make sure, this is just my personal opinion, is regional transit, which I think is very important in this area, even to Fergus, even to Rockwood, even to Cambridge, even to Kitchener-Waterloo. Right.
Hamilton, which doesn't exist anymore. But anyway, that's
not Hamilton. No, I'm just kidding. We stopped there. Claps and corners,
that's
you're
it.
Done. Get off the
Pickard's
bus.
Peanuts, and that's it.
But that regional transit issue, how can we accommodate that movement of people in the best possible way possible, not only inside our city, but maybe even without? And I leave it up to the experts to determine the best route that we go on that, whether it's privatized or not, and what element of it is. And they come back to council and they give us the report.
Well, you will find an ally about regional transit in the new transit manager, Mike Spicer, who I got a chance to have a conversation with. Listen to Guelph Politicast tomorrow.
That's
tomorrow's episode.
Okay. That's good. That's good because yeah. I've talked to other mayors about that issue.
I think the concern that this person was bringing up was if that was kind of like the default direction, because I think there's a lot of concern that the 2015 service wasn't restored, that, there's a new manager, there's a service review. I think, and Mike Spicer brought this up as well, that there's kind of a feeling out there, whether it's people who take transit, even the transit drivers themselves, that the city's leaning one way.
No, I can only speak to myself on that one, but I believe I'm speaking for everyone on council. I don't mean to put words in their mouth at all, but
sure.
The way these service reviews go is we're not involved in it. You go and check and you report back, and so there's no predetermined outcome whatsoever, and so I look forward to the report, and that probably won't come out until maybe even beginning of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a while to go on that.
Well, this kind of follows along the same lines. And somebody else asked about your support for the 2009 design manual, which calls for higher densification and active transportation. They thought that kind of the goals there kind of conflicted with some of the things you've said on the record about your ideas for the city about active transportation and densification.
So on the active transportation part, I don't think you can find anyone right now at all that is more in favor of active transportation. This council, by the way, as a whole, has probably moved the active transportation bar further than many.
Mm-hmm.
We just talked recently about the Woodlawn Road multi-use path, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just heard me talk about why I think we need to do more on bicycling infrastructure. trails is always high on the list of our community walking trails to do. So I don't really know where that person might be coming from on that part. But on the intensification part,
right?
First of all, I have always been a believer that we need to be careful in the types of housing mix that we have. We just unanimously sent and voted on a report to go up to the province for their update on the Places to Grow Act that specifically said basically what I've been saying for several years, that we have to be careful on how much sort of the growing up part that we do, mm-hmm. that we don't also have a proper mix of low density as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was a staff report. So I couldn't believe that the staff report said a lot of the things that I've been saying for a while. So I think we do need to, first of all, growing up, so building up is actually smart building.
Mm-hmm.
It actually does cost the taxpayers a little bit less because of the infrastructure required in the servicing. And it does help with transportation modes because you have more people in a certain area. So there's lots of advantages to growing up. And our current targets are 40% intensification within the city, which I completely agree with. So I don't – maybe that person, if they want to email me mayor@guelph.ca, I'm more than happy to have that conversation with them if they think I've maybe said something a little different, and I'm willing to have that discussion.
Fair enough. somebody else concerned about the new stormwater rates, wondering if there might be opportunities in the future for discounts if by rain barrels or other have other sort of deviation methods.
Yes, so that great question. So the new stormwater fee, just to be very clear, you used to pay it fully under your property taxes. What we did as a council is we directed staff to take it out of the property taxes and set up the fee. And the difference between what you were paying on average on the stormwater through your property tax to the fee, you will see a $4 fee now on your hydro bill. So you'll see your hydro, you'll see your water, you'll have a line for your wastewater, and then now you'll have a line for your stormwater. So even though you'll see $4, the difference with what you used to be paying to the new $4 is about $1.51 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not a brand new $4 fee. It's only the difference that we need to go to a sustainable rate to catch up on our, guess what, everybody? There's that magic word of the day, infrastructure. We have a huge backlog in stormwater infrastructure, and when it comes to flooding, we have to take care of our city for that. And then when it comes to any potential rebates, we just had an open house at City Hall about 3 or 4 weeks ago, an engagement process with the public to look at exactly things that people can do at their business or at their home to maybe look at creating more soft services instead of hard services so that the runoff into the stormwater system is pulled back. And based on different things that people do and implement in their home, it could help with a rebate. And that rebate report will come to council, I believe, this year. Now, interestingly enough, I've talked to some other cities that have implemented stormwater and fees, and then they've gone to the rebates, and they've actually advised don't do the rebates.
Oh, really?
That it can actually create an administrative nightmare, and the administration costs to check on everybody that's doing things on their properties costs more than the rebate.
Interesting.
And I'm not saying I land there. I'm just being truthful with what I'm hearing from other cities.
Okay.
But we're still moving down that road to get a report on maybe looking at doing exactly those types of rebates.
Okay, and this will have to be the final one, but I think it's the most consequential question of the day. Can we get outdoor shinny rinks with proper boards?
I'd be all for that, actually. I would be all for that. Yeah, yeah. And play later at night and music.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Solved.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It was kind of funny that someone would pose this question, because I remember one of the things we talked about last time was the rink in the South End that the kids were playing on. But
the Rebel Rink.
The Rebel Rink. Yeah. That's right.
Yes. It just took one person to make the call. One person made that call, and unfortunately, that's the way it went. So that was not a. Thanks for bringing it up. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Well,
go for it, Rebels. I'll give the okay. Just do it.
That was not the mayor who just said that.
No, it wasn't.
You've mentioned your email a couple of times, but if people do want to reach out to you, Cam.
Sure. So my email is mayor@guelph.ca. Twitter is @CamGuthrie. Facebook, my Facebook page is, I believe it's Mayor Cam Guthrie. Mm-hmm. Instagram is Mayor Cam Guthrie. I think that's all the ways you can get.
I'm sure people can. Yeah, we'll.
They'll find you.
Yes. We've left enough breadcrumbs.
Yes.
So, Mayor Cam Guthrie, again, thank you so much for your time. It was a great hour, and we look forward to having you again. Maybe.
Yeah,
this
maybe
time next
sooner.
Year.
Yeah,
oh, maybe sooner.
I'd be happy to do it anytime.
Maybe we'll do a spring.
Anytime at all,
yeah.
And all the best to you guys over the holidays.
Thanks and you, you too, Mayor. Thank you so much. And we'll have to leave that here for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. And just a reminder, we are taking a couple of weeks off. And we are doing holiday shows. Our favorite political documentaries is next week, December 22nd, and then we will have our annual year-end awards show on December the 29th. We will be back live and in person on January the 5th, so stay tuned for all the Open Sources developments at opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and you can go to Twitter at @OS_Guelph and find us on that social media platform. And, of course, you can listen to this and all previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can find us on iTunes. You can find me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scott Hertz on Twitter, Scott Hertz on Facebook, blog at the Spanner Book, and happy holidays, everyone.
And I ditto. There we go. a favorite expression of the mayor there. And yeah, happy holidays to everyone. And we will still be here with a new episode next week, just not in person. Stay tuned right now for, speaking of in person, DJ Sounds Good to Me. Maybe. You'll hear DJ Sounds Good to Me at the top of the other at the top of the hour, whether that's live or otherwise. And be back here next week for more episodes of Open Sources. You are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll see you next week at 5:00.